Do you want to know? I can grab a random child.
You mean one of your kids? Or a random child off the street? Come here, young one, as you pass. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of Swift Over Coffee. I'm Paul Hudson.
And I'm Erica Sadoun.
And listeners, I hope you're here to enjoy our new online experience for millions of talented and creative developers around the world. Are you ready, Erica?
I am so ready.
So before we get into the news, Erica, I gather we have some unfinished business from last episode.
In fact, we do, because pronouncing things the correct way is just a matter of public decency and what would we even call it? I don't know what to call it.
Well, it sounds like you're worried about some sort of pronunciation pandemic.
Okay, so I ran polls to find out how everybody was pronouncing SimControl and GUI to see if they were pronouncing it correctly.
And what were the results, Erica?
The results were that most people were pronouncing things incorrectly.
So what you're saying is, she's right, and most other people in the world are all wrong. What were the actual results?
The actual results?
How many people said GUI?
About slightly under a quarter.
Said GUI?
Yeah. Something like 60% of the people say GUI.
No one says GUI.
Well, I have to say it with disdain because it's such an unpleasant thing to say.
Okay, here we go. So the actual results said that less than a quarter of people said GUI.
And I think they're mostly old people, too. People who are used to the fact that UI can also refer to something that is not a graphical user interface.
And less than a third of people said SimControl. So SimCTL came out of well over half of folks, and GUI came out at almost 60%. So a pretty much landslide Hudson victory there, I feel, Erica.
Except they're wrong. And this is just something you sort of have to accept in your heart, just like many people have lost the use of the direct object when saying, he gave it to Paul and I, which is so wrong.
So folks, tonight when you go to bed saying to yourself, GUI and SimCTL, just know how wrong you are and how Erica is very silently judging you from afar.
And now it's time for news. And the big news this week is WWDC going completely online in response to the corona pandemic, I guess it is. And they are due to be scheduled with the online conference in June, but this summer, which technically means after the solstice, which is, I believe, the 23rd through the 30th.
Yep. And being technically correct is the best kind of correct. But what I'm more keen to know is how it's actually going to work out, because they've said, you know, it's a completely new online experience. And they've also said you'll engage with Apple engineers. So what does that really mean? Does that mean group Skype calls? Does it mean FaceTime one-to-ones? I've got no idea. No one really knows. And it's all stay tuned right now, because they don't really know either by the guess of it. We're all going to figure out as we go, I guess.
Until now, one of the biggest things you could not get as a non-local participant is access to labs. Because it could be argued that WWDC has already become a virtual conference over the past few years. However, labs and access to those engineers is the reason that so many people really want to be there in person, something that can't generally be delivered, that one-on-one contact. Now, if you try to scale that, that can't scale. So my guess is that they will have some sort of lab thing that it probably needs to have some sort of lottery system so that you can get a 20-minute appointment with an Apple engineer. I don't see how they can manage it other than that.
I think that's exactly what it's going to be. And even that's going to be tricky. You know, I spent a lot of time at labs last year, wandering around, asking questions, asking some more, waiting a minute, trying out, asking some more. I'd often come up with a document full of 20 or 30 questions at a time to get the most out of my limited lab time, to really pack it in there and walk away and act on it straight away. What they'd say also, the labs are, of course, brilliant. I love the labs very much, but I'm also going to miss the events because the events were absolutely wonderful. It was one of the only chances for me to go out to the Bay Area, meet folks who work at Apple, who are my friends, just hang out, have dinner, get coffee, just chat, look at other Bay Area companies and just catch up on their lives, because we obviously live very, very far away. I'm going to really, really miss that.
While I think you can still have events that are things like birds of a feather, obviously you're not going to go out for a real beer. And there's not going to be parties, so to speak. But I think Apple is going to do its best to provide opportunities for like-minded people to get together during the event. And I think as a community that we can start trying to organize virtual events as well, whether it's, you know, virtual performances of, you know, Apple-themed music or virtual parties, I guess. It may be weird and hard, but I think that it's a challenge that most people are going to become more excited about as they start thinking, what does it mean to have this transfer from everybody in San Francisco, whether you're actually at WWDC or next door at Alt or any of those things, into this completely dispersed situation?
Yeah, and we're going to find out really soon as more details leak out from Apple and they announce more things, what the actual plan's going to be. We'll see. That's all we can say at this point.
So moving on from WWDC, I want to get to the big news of the week, which is the Swift Core team's new argument parser project. Now, you've always been able to write command line utilities for Unix using Swift. And this has been a core thing that many of us do, but most of us don't. However, what the argument parser does is allow you to use the standardized system of entering arguments for your command line utilities, and you don't have to write these all yourself. So if you need a help output, it does it for you. If you need to have flags, if you need to have options with values associated, what argument parser does is it builds these all into the command line feature. And if you're not using the Unix command line, this is going to be completely useless to you. However, if you live at the command line, if you love the command line, and if you love developing new utilities, this has turned what had been just a really unpleasant and hard task into one that's so simple and well-designed. And I am so grateful to Nate Cook and everybody who developed this. This is just my favorite thing and it's brand new. And I encourage everybody who's into the command line to investigate it.
So these things had existed before. Like Apple weren't trailblazing in terms of the availability of features. There were other competing ones, including another one from Apple as part of the Swift Package Manager Utilities system made previously. But this one is now split off into its own thing, its own SPM package. So you could pull it in and use it very easily. And I just love the code because it's really, really super modern Swift. So there's, you know, property wrappers galore for declaring how your things work. And it just looks brilliant to read.
It is a beautiful open source project. And there are a couple of things that I would change because that's sort of what I do. I don't like that the main functionality is called run and main. It feels so 1972. But I've already expressed my feedback to them about, you know, naming it something a little bit more modern. But this is a really terrific package. And if you want to get involved, it is an open source project and it's available for anyone who wants to get involved.
Awesome.
Moving on from there, we have our week's contentious Swift proposal.
Oh yeah, this is a big one.
And this one is the multiple trailing closures proposal, SE0279, for multiple trailing closures. If you use animations, you'll notice that you have both an animation closure and a completion closure. If you use Swift UI, you'll notice also that many of the constructs have multiple closures that are passed to it. And the question is, how do you format this? Because right now, Swift only supports a single trailing closure argument. What this proposal attempts to do is provide a system of braces and labels that allow you to separate those and structure those. And everybody kind of agrees this is a great thing to do. However, nobody seems to like the way this particular proposal does it.
I like it.
Except for Paul.
All the options provided aren't any better. The alternative provided are no better. It's like, good God, job. You've spent days and days and days arguing, putting me off, wanting to go anywhere near the evolution forums, and the result is unchanged.
I think that when baking a Swift evolution proposal, that it's okay to take time and let the design happen iteratively. I don't know if this proposal is going to go through as is. If it did, it would be okay, but I don't think it would be really beautiful or great. I think there can be a better way to show two or more trailing closures at once. I like the idea of labels. I think that the braces that are introduced in this proposal are just kind of overload.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see what the alternatives are because they just look the same to me. Latin's alternative is hideous.
If you're interested in this, head on over to the Swift forums where there's a full discussion and you can see what some of the alternatives are that are being proposed.
Just be warned, it's quite argumentative. It's very, very long. And I just don't know it's constructive.
Welcome to Swift evolution.
I don't know. The problem is that we have a definite problem. And it looks ugly as heck in Swift UI. This is not aimed at Swift UI. They're not saying this is specifically for Swift UI, but Swift UI will be a major beneficiary here. Things like buttons, with an image inside the button, you have to have button, then action, then a closure, then end that, then more parens, then have the image inside the button. It just really does not look good to read in code. And the alternatives they're providing, they're suggesting, look significantly better. The default one they're recommending looks way better, in my opinion. It's really easy to read in comparison. And they actually give that example. They give the button action label example.
So long as they don't end up using some sort of Python solution with indentation, I'm probably going to be okay with the results.
And that's what we don't really know from the evolution forums is, you know, folks go, yeah, -1, I hate this idea, whatever. But actually, give it a week. And they'd be like, yeah, I'm used to it now. It's just not what we're used to. It's a different syntax than we're used to. And therefore, it feels alien because it is alien. And I think I can't tell how many people here say, actually, after a week of this, I'll be fine with it. I just don't know.
So elsewhere in the news, Apple recently introduced some updates to its app review guidelines. And somebody recently noticed that the push notification guidelines have been changed. And you are now allowed to advertise by push so long as there's consent. Now, most of the people covering this have pointed out that people will need to be able to opt out of your advertising, but you also have to use consent language in your app's UI to allow people to opt in as well. So are people going to abuse this? Probably, but we're going to have to see how badly it gets abused and how Apple will respond to push notification advertising, because it seems to me something that many developers will really want to have and most consumers will not.
The flip side is that it's one of those things we already have. You know, Apple have very, very rarely, if ever, clamped down on push notification spam. That's kind of been the standard for a long time now. You'd get alerts not just from Apple as well, quite frankly, but you get alerts from random things saying, hey, check out this thing, you should buy it now. And that's been across the board. Netflix advertises things to me, sorry, you know, watch this thing, you might like it. And I never have done, but they keep on doing it. There's no way of opting out without losing push. So the state of play we have right now is I get push spam and I have to turn off all push. This thing appears to make it really clear you must at least ask for explicit opt-in consent. So it's as long as folks honor that, which they currently aren't, but if they were to honor it now, it's explicit, it'd be an improvement, I think.
So do you think that they added this language just to give them more power to clamp down on abusive services, or because they were trying to actually legitimize it?
I think a bit of both. Because it needs to be clamped down on because you get too much nonsense through push sometimes and I just have to kill the entire app's push, which is very annoying. But also, to be fair, if someone does say, yes, I want to know about marketing promotions, I want to know about discounts, I want to know about offers and similar, that's a legitimate thing they'll want to sign up for. And they might not want a weekly email of great hotel sales they care about. They might want to just say, here are things I care about personally, tell me straight away. So I think actually it's a good idea to have adverts in push for that, as long as we developers actually respect it.
So let's move on to picks. Picks are the time that Paul and I just talk about things that we particularly like, have caught our eyes, or that we've learned about in the past few weeks. So, Paul, why don't you go first?
So my pick this week is from a developer called Sean Baek. I believe he's Korean, and he's made a thing called Table, which is hard to Google, but it's very, very good. And Sean's a wonderful community member. He provides lots of feedback and works hard to spread the word about things that are happening, which is just really awesome to have. And this library he's made is inspired by JavaScript, which might put some folks off immediately. They're sort of pressing fast forward already, perhaps. But I really do believe that Steve Jobs quote about great artists stealing. And JavaScript has a feature which I think I'm glad he has now stolen. And it's a way to get print, the standard sort of Swift print function, save it sort of superpowers. So it can now print things in a tabular layout, in a table with sort of ASCII art around it to delimit headers and columns and similar. And he's done a really good job. You can give it arrays, dictionaries, random values, integers, strings, whatever you'd like to, and it'll all be neatly formatted in the table. In the future, he's going to work to add things like support for codable objects, so you can have custom types being put in there very easily. And it even has support for SPM out of the box. So it's really, really easy to get into your product. And obviously, in debug mode only, just get cleaner, simpler, clearer output from print.
That is beautiful. That just sounds like something I didn't know I need. And then as soon as you described it, there was just this utter feeling of, why is this not in my life? I just love that idea.
Well, my advice for Sean would be, this should be in the standard library. Because it's really, really useful to be able to see. Because I'll often do print some large object, right? And I don't want that. I want to see a table. And if he could do things like use mirroring to read the properties from the object and make each property automatically a column or a row, it'd be so gorgeous to see immediately. So I really hope he considers putting this forward for evolution, even though I've just said evolution can be quite fighty.
I'd vote +1.
Yeah, I know, because it doesn't impact any shipping code. It's purely additive. It's for debugging purposes only. It just makes our life nicer. And until then, you know, go and grab the code. We'll put the GitHub link in the show notes. But until then, just grab the code and try it out, because it's really, really nice. What's your pick, Erica?
My pick is from a French developer called Agaric Perdereau, and he has come out with an application. It's on the Mac App Store right now. It's called Slideas, Slideas. And what it is a Markdown-based slide presentation. Now, let me explain why I'm so excited about this. It's because you can just create a text file and mark it with all your slides. There are a few enhancements that aren't in standard Markdown. And you can include all your thoughts, your ideas, you can create presenter notes and so forth. And this app will parse the Markdown and transform it into presentable slides, including presenter notes. It is such an easy way of getting all your ideas down in a single editable fashion in a way that I think just really lends itself to how a lot of us create talks, where we start with notes and then we have to do that whole transfer into Keynote or whatever. This understands that we have thoughts and then we might want to edit an earlier slide or go to a later slide and add a few more bullet points and so forth. And in here, to add those bullet points, all you do is add, you know, a star. It automatically does tables for you. It automatically does all the fancy sort of things you want in slides. And it does it in a really easy to create, easy to edit way. And it's really early. There's still, you know, it's still creaky. He needs a designer. He needs to develop this a little bit more. But using it, it's like, oh, where has this app been all my life? I love this app.
So I would say to listeners is, this is a great app, obviously, for macOS, but I recommend that you go and look at the slidiest.app website, the website for the app. I think it's a very, very good, clear example of what an app landing page should look like. So you want to try and build your app and ship the app and get it marketed to the world, go and look at the website and see how they've done it. It makes it really clear. Slidiest is the easiest way to create a beautiful markdown presentation with all the features you need. Big thing. And then a video, then get on the app store, then lots of screenshots, bullet points of features, some animated GIFs showing how everything works along the way. There's a downloadable press kit for people who want to review it professionally, and contact links and more. So there's lots and lots of information there. And it's a great example of what a good landing page looks like. And I also want to say that when Erica was speaking, in my head I was thinking, wow, this sounds like Dexset. And it is, in theory, like Dexset because it's a markdown to presentation tool. However, there's a really clear comparison between Dexset and Slidiest on the Slidiest site. Again, it's a great example of how to present your apps more clearly. And they're not, you know, taking pops at Dexset. They're just saying, yes, we both have tables. Yes, we both have videos and we have math support and code support and similar. But we have vector icons and they don't. We have graphs and they don't. We have open source themes and they don't, for example. So they're making it really clear how their app is different and better than, in some cases, Dexset. So now it's time for our open ballot. And last time, it wasn't an open ballot. It was a challenge, right? This is one of Erica's wonderful ideas when she isn't worrying about pronunciation. she wanted to issue folks a challenge where you could prove your skills to show her you could at least code correctly, even if you can't pronounce things correctly. And the challenge she set for you last time was to recreate the breathe animation from watchOS. And this was actually, I think, enjoyable because we only had an hour. So you couldn't spend too much time noodling around or trying alternatives. You had a really crunch to work through, and it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of great feedback from folks who tried it out.
I think people really enjoyed getting their hands dirty. And I think in addition to just trying to code the geometry of this particular challenge, that looking at the app itself, it just gave me such more appreciation of the details and subtleties that Apple put into this, because this is far more complex than it appears when you just give it a brief glance.
Yeah, certainly I spent a long time sort of staring at my watch saying, oh, this is very interesting. Look at that. Oh, it's so pretty. And the basic, if you haven't tried the breathe animation, if you haven't got an Apple Watch, for example, it's a set of circles that open up and spin out, and they're all like a whitey-green color. And as they shrink again, there's like a blurring effect that Erica thinks is more like particles, but I think it's more like a blurring effect. And it sort of scales away and fades out. And it's designed to be soothing because it's about focusing on your breathing and being calm. So there's a lot of things in there that are just very, very gentle, soft, clever little touches to make it a really pleasing UI.
There's a very soft, subtle color gradient.
There is.
That goes from green to blue. I did not even notice this until after I was completely done with the challenge. And it's something that some of the people did pick up on and many of the others did not. But I never noticed that there was this gradient in there. And it's really quite pretty.
Yeah, so I didn't have a full hour, sadly. I was a bit short on time, but I think the gradient would be the next thing I was trying to tackle. I had to go doing the blur, and that was a disaster. So I just backed out and focused on just getting the timings right. Anyway, let's have a look roughly at some of the answers we got, because there was some great code here. And, you know, just looking at the selection of code, it's immediately obvious that SwiftUI was a big, big winner here. I mean, the overwhelming majority of folks use SwiftUI. With a variety of code inside there, you know, all the code's linked in our GitHub to look through. But you can sort of see how Beja Al-Maleh had a color-changing slider. Morten Bech-Didlevsen had a nice hard light filter plus a slider. Mogens Egeskov had the gradient in there as well. Dan O'Leary used images to create the effect. There's a really interesting range of SwiftUI solutions.
What I did was I originally started out with layers. And I just got so sick of the layers because of how hard it is to duplicate the animation and so forth. I switched to Swift UI and it instantly became this beautiful, very tractable solution. It's amazing how much Swift UI gives us that we don't really appreciate.
As you set the challenge last time, I was thinking straight away, this is Swift UI. This is perfect for Swift UI. And of course, the watchOS team, you know, was a genesis of Swift UI. Maybe they were using Swift UI. Maybe it's all core animation. Maybe it's Sprikit they use. We'll never know, perhaps. But it does feel like a really natural Swift UI solution. A few folks, Guillaume Rambo, Victor, and Sean, did watchOS apps as well. They use Swift UI on watchOS, which is an added level of difficulty, I think, because, of course, the watchOS debugger takes a bit longer to connect, longer to ship to the simulator. So you lose an extra 10 seconds for every run you do there. So well done to those four for going the extra mile. And Sean particularly did that blur effect. So as the flower sort of shrinks away again, he made a lovely blur effect behind it as well using Swift UI.
There were a number of people who also just went with what I originally was doing, which is layers in UIKit. And those include Pratik, Fernando, and Joss. So good on all of you.
Yeah, UIKit was a brave choice. And I'm not sure whether that was because they wanted the challenge, because they felt more comfortable in UIKit. They hadn't perhaps got much Swift UI experience. But yeah, UIKit, there were a lot of fights to overcome there, I think. At least they went for the sort of more UI view approach. You went for hardcore CA layer, which is another other level. But again, read Erica's code. Erica's got actual maths in her code. Well done, Erica.
And my first attempt was in the playground before I moved to UIKit. And I know that Aaron and Pratik both went with playground solutions, which is a wonderful way to do very quick turnaround prototyping. I love playgrounds.
Yeah, but I can see that backfiring because so often I go to a playground and I like, you know, press play and it's just sort of spinning for a while, staring at me, doing nothing. I'm like, no, I'm losing my time. I only have 1 hour here. But they did a great job.
And the worst part of that is that now under Catalina, you have to authorize the playground to run the simulator. So it's become even slower.
A handful of solutions were particularly standout, unique, and interesting in their own way. Ryanoff, I think, really went to town because we made it pretty clear last time. You could go for a direct clone if you wanted to, and most folks did. I did. Erica did. But Ryanoff really went to town. He added more circles and different kinds of effects and basically toyed around with variety. So have a look at Ryan's solution. It's quite beautiful. Daniel got the design looking great, but he then implemented Core Haptics, which is a lovely like mini framework in iOS 13 for having, you know, touch effects and similar in your app. And it just looks so good and it feels great. And it creates that sort of breathing, tapping effect using Core Haptics right on the app. So very, very good job, Daniel.
And then, of course, this was a direction that I considered going. I thought about going. I didn't. And you know what? I would not have done as good a job as Simon did. Simon Salomons did Sprikit. He had delay. He had the outer flower. It was just a really good job.
Yeah, so Simon has that outer flower plus the delay, which I think I had a delay and Simon had a delay, but no one else really had a delay. And it's in there because it's like you got to breathe in, hold it for a little bit, then breathe out, hold it for a little bit. And it matters to the actual breathing experience. So yeah, Sprikit, yeah, that would be my third choice. After if I had Swift UI first, then UIKit, and then Sprikit last, I think, because it's just, you're going to fight with it. And he actually had to write quite a bit of code for a solution, I think, as well. So what I recommend to folks, you know, go to the GitHub repo, look at all the solutions, because you'll see a huge range. And I think part of that is because Swift UI is very new, so we haven't got these sort of standard mindsets of working yet. Partly because some folks really went to town, experimented a little bit with different designs, different colors, and extra UI around it and more. Like in my solution, there's not a lot of code. If you include like the comments at the top and the white space, it's 37 lines of Swift UI code. It's really, really short. And that's probably the smallest close solution you can probably get. But I haven't got the gradient colors. I haven't got the outer flower. I haven't got the blur effect going on. But you can see how the blend mode works. I saw some folks trying to use alpha, and actually a blend mode is a much nicer solution because you get that sort of glow as the flower shrinks.
Also, one of the things you might learn is little tricks from Paul on how to do a delay at the end of the animation, which is just a modifier. I can't believe you got that just by sticking a little modifier in there.
Yeah, again, SwiftUI is doing nearly all the work. You can look at that code and think, where's the rest of it? And there is no rest of it. That is absolutely everything. It is trivial in SwiftUI to do the basic effect. Obviously, the more advanced one requires more thinking, but the basic effect is so simple. And I think it's highlighted one of the very, very clear strengths of SwiftUI. When you want a fully custom UI, you don't want tables or navigation views, whatever, SwiftUI will absolutely shine. And when you want to use fine, you know, table views to do, or collection views are similar, UIKit is still more powerful for many, if not most, tasks. But for fully custom UI, SwiftUI just wipes the floor.
And if you have ideas for future challenges, drop us a note because we would love to hear from you.
Just keep in mind, it's got to be doable in under an hour. This shouldn't be vast amounts of work. We just want to have fun, dip a toe in, dip a toe out again, and be done. It's a great little task if you are quarantined thanks to Corona.
And may all of you have toilet paper. Thank you so much for listening, and I want to wrap up with an open ballot for next time. Since WWDC has gone completely virtual, I want to ask you, how do we as a community provide that sense of connection and support that we would have normally had in San Francisco and is not going to be an opportunity this time? Reach out with your ideas, whether it's using Slack channels, FaceTime, or creating special events. Drop us a note in Twitter, and we really are looking forward to hearing what you have to suggest.
And don't forget to leave a review. We read every single one and appreciate every single one. Until next time, take care.
Bye-bye, everybody.